All right, come on in and grab a seat at the Reality Roundtable.
I'm Mags.
And I'm the big guy.
And we are the Reality Rascals. Hello,
Welcome
folks.
back.
And we
Welcome
are
back.
back and better than ever.
Yes, we have a new website, realityroundtable.com, where we'll post some of our outtakes and videos and also obviously have links to all of our podcasts. So the first thing that stuck out in my mind was something that my mind didn't retain. I had to be reminded of it, but it did stick out and stand out. And that was the monologue by Tevin in the beginning. The wife was watching with me and she said, "What happened to Probst? Did they get rid of him?" She thought he was the new host of the show. It was that good. He didn't really say anything unique, but the way that he was able to summarize the survivor experience, I think was hope. I hope was a little bit of foreshadowing. And I think it was interesting because how well he was able to do it because he had not been on the show. So the fact that he wasn't on the show, but was able to give you an accurate feeling or sense of what it would be like on the show was interesting. A little bit of foreshadowing because he seems to have a firm grasp on what you need to do in order to win.
Yeah, I liked it. It was something different. And Probst is coming on and, you know, whatever at the beginning. Didn't know who it was at first until they showed who it was. And like you said, he hasn't played before, so he doesn't really know. But the best part of the whole thing was the music crescendo up when he was saying stuff. And like, I don't know, three or four times. I think that was the best part. Even in, you know, everything he said was nice and calm, but just the music part in the background was great.
Yeah, no, he did. They did a great job of editing. And as we said, he did a great job of explaining what's going to happen. So the first challenge I thought was pretty good. They had to carry those giant puzzle pieces around and then build a podium. I found it a little confusing to follow. I think that's mostly because we don't know who anyone is yet, and we don't really know who the teams were. There seemed to be some color coordination, some loose color coordination, which did help a little bit. I also like that the first team got Flint and the other two did not. I don't know if that's usually how they do it. I thought two teams usually get Flint.
I was laughing though because one when they got off the boat, Ben was throwing up in a bag.
Oh, I
So,
did not see
and
that.
then the second one was Liz, who I picked in the pool, which was a mistake. She gets off the boat and her whole team is like running to the beach and she's like, "Hey, wait up, guys! That's it. She's done." I told my wife
Yes.
that was it. She's finished. No shot with her. Anyway, you know, then when they usually Probst does the old Q&A, like he doesn't know who the people are. "Hey, you in the black, what's your name?" Like he didn't do any of that. Got right into the challenge. The best part was Maria carrying that one piece, puzzle piece right on her back. I think Tiffany did as well. Probst used the usual. That's what you want to see on Survivor. Yeah, right in the first challenge, you know. And she put that thing right on her back. That's who I wanted in my build. Yeah, my daughter got her, but you know, what are you gonna do?
To get a shout from Popes in the very first challenge, I think, is always a feather in your cap. All right, so let's start with the tribes, go through each tribe. I don't know the names yet, so if you know, you can jump in. But the purple tribe, that was Jelinski's tribe. They lost, so they had to try and earn their Flint by filling two giant pots with a bucket, and each of them with two buckets. The buckets were riddled with holes. It seemed nearly impossible. Jelinski and Q were the two that went. Q was like, "I'm not going to quit. I am going to pick Jelinski because he looks like a kind of guy I'd want to work with." Eventually, Jelinski quit. Q was like, "I can't work with him." And it was funny because he actively tried to get him to come out. He kept saying, "Get up, let's go, keep going. We got to keep moving. You don't want to quit." And it highlighted, I think the whole experience highlighted Jelinski's lack of social game because he wasn't able to identify that, okay, I've got to keep showing and putting on a brave face, even if in his brain, he's quit. He can't stop moving, and he wasn't able to do that.
A couple of things with Jelinski. I mean, one, he volunteers, you know, to do the challenge. Two, I thought that challenge could not be done. However, the size of the barrels were, they look gigantic. When they realized that the buckets had holes in it, when you take the shirt, your shirt off, wrap it around the bucket so it wouldn't leak.
Yeah, or put it inside the bucket like a liner of some sort.
According to Jelinski, he said that Q wanted to quit first. That's what he said afterwards, apparently.
I think it made sense to quit. The way it was presented was that Q wanted to keep going and Jelinski didn't. There wasn't any discussion about it. I think, like you said, there's no sense in completely gassing yourself when you've got no shot of finishing. They had like 2 hours left. I'm not sure how you're going to know that from the hourglass. To me, it was like, okay, let's think about this. Let's take 5 seconds and think about this. Does it make sense for us to keep working as hard as we have been? We are not halfway done. Our time is halfway out. Maybe we should just stop and conserve some of our energy. Like that wasn't a discussion that really took place. They just showed Jelinski laying on the ground, and you know, then he's like, "We should quit." And he's like, "You really want to quit?" You know, like the way it was presented looked like Jelinski quit, and to me that had a bad look. If that's not what went down, then you know, then I take it back. All right. So also in that tribe, I thought it was funny. I guess funny is the wrong word because someone could have gotten seriously hurt. You never see the hut collapse. And we got to see the hut collapse, which is pretty remarkable. Surprised, like I said, that nobody got hurt. Do you remember anything like that happening before where the hut collapses?
No, not that early. I mean, I'm sure it happened, but it never.
Yeah, it doesn't stick with you. So Kenzie and Tiffany also on that team, they seem to be running things with Q a little bit. But I guess his personality just might be a little too strong for some of them because he did say something like, and it was off the air, something like a woman can't do this about that sweat challenge. And he's like, it has to be a guy, something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was. So Tiffany got the beware advantage, which I would have run from. I as soon as I saw it, I'm like, put it down. But it did work out for her.
You got to do something at the beginning. I probably wouldn't have passed on it either, but it's a little different because she finds it and then she had to dig it up and then you had to find the key.
I love Banu and I really want him to win. I just don't know if he's going to be able to. Because he wears his emotions on his sleeve. Like his every facial expression is hilarious. The longer he's on, the better the show is going to be.
Yeah, I liked him a lot. Yeah, when I read he was, you know, like living in the like the jungles of India or something for 10, 15 years, whatever they said.
Yeah.
So, maybe I should have picked this guy. But yeah, the facial expressions were great. But, you know, if he's going to keep crying and all that other stuff, I mean, it's.
Probably doesn't have a chance. Yeah, and I believe he said his first 18 years of life. I think he left when he was 18. He's also firmly established himself as a floater at this point already in one episode, or you want to call it two episodes because it was 2 hours long, but I think it was just one 3-day length of time. Right. He is definitely a floater. He's jumping between people. He's talking to every side. He agrees with everything. He's easily manipulated. The Green Tribe. So the Green Tribe, that has Charlie, Jem, and Ben. They were initially split along gender lines. This is the tribe that was split along gender lines, if you remember. Women were able to pull Charlie over to their side. I think that it was a smart strategy to identify that there were three and three, as far as three males and three females. The thing that I would have done differently is I would have just befriended Charlie first instead of immediately recruiting him. I don't know if that would have backfired because what they did worked perfectly fine. He was like, okay, I want to work with you. I just think that it was too early to start to draw a line in the sand with your other tribe members. You don't know if you lost. You don't know if you're going to tribal. It didn't make sense to do it before that happened. I would have been really nice to him. I would have tried to befriend him. And then the instant we were going to tribal, that's when I would have tried to suck him into my alliance. What they did was a little preemptive, and you can't fault him for that. I just think it was too early.
And then we find out that Charlie is a big Swifty fan. So that was impressive. So of course you're going to befriend him for that.
Right. But
Tika Tribe, I believe they're called. So it was Charlie and it was Ben, I believe, right? They did the Savvy Challenge.
Yes.
So they get to the puzzle, the combination for the lock. So they figured out that the word.
It was like a word search. It was a word search. And within the word search, you had to figure out what the clues were telling you.
Yeah. So they had to highlight like the words, you know, spelled out with letters. So they wound up, I think, putting lines through, what, maybe like 12 numbers, 10, 12 numbers.
Yeah.
And then whatever was left over, supposedly, they didn't figure that part out, obviously, to dig under the lock to find probably the real combination, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Oh, so, you know, they wind up giving up there, and actually time ran out. So, and they didn't.
Again, that one to me seemed impossible. I don't know how they were supposed to figure out that the remaining letters were the ones that you're supposed to use, unless there was something in the clue that we weren't privy to.
Obviously, time ran out, and no supplies for them.
There was one little hint or clue about they looked underneath the table, the structure that it was on, and they couldn't find anything. And then once that happened, they were defeated. I think they felt like that was their only glimmer of hope in being able to solve the puzzle, was that they had overlooked something, and they did, in fact, overlook something. What they found wasn't the right clue to help them solve the puzzle. Like I said, I think they're two really difficult challenges, and there was something in the beginning, and you can speak to this part, that Probst said about the number of idols and challenges and the type of challenges and idols that they're going to have are going to be different. It's going to be different than what we've come to expect.
A lot of complaints. There was too many advantages the last couple seasons by, I guess, the fans. There's more power in the game with the idols as opposed to extra votes and steal a vote and all the voting stuff, which when you go to tribal council, it doesn't work out as effective. But when you have all these, you know, some of these other powerful idols out there.
He had mentioned that this was the culmination of a plan that they had put in motion so many years ago, however many years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And this was kind of, they're going to start to reap some of the benefit, the reward from that plan. And we'll see what that is, if they mention it, if it's obvious to us or not. We're supposed to get a little bit different flavor when it comes to idols and when it comes to advantages this season as compared to some of the past. Finally, the Orange Tribe. That's the one with Tevin, who I already said is one of my early favorites. I thought at times his personality might be too big for Survivor and rub people the wrong way, but he is in a perfect tribe for him. He seems to be getting along really well with everyone within his tribe. His monologue at the beginning, like I said, shows that he is aware, even though he never really played, and understands what it takes to win, even at least as well as anyone who's never played this show before can. The survivor I have for our pool is Hunter, and he really seems like the odd man out on that tribe. He has no social game at this point. He needs to get it together. Soda said, you know, I'm singing the songs. I'm doing what I would do at camp as a camp counselor. And he is also a camp counselor, and he's having no part of it. And to me, there's no worse way to start Survivor than to put yourself on the outside of whatever social circle, whatever social games are being played early on.
Yes, Tevin, I liked him as well. Not the same kind of vibe from like Yam Yam, but you could tell he wasn't kind of like a jerk. He was just a happy go lucky guy. I love Soda. Love the energy. I wanted to pick her in our pool, but somebody else, you follow along, got her before I did. But yeah, that tribe should be pretty funny. They said there's going to be a lot of singing and stuff this year.
Venus in that tribe looks like she's in trouble. She's already searching for an idol. Got caught.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was that big a deal, but it seemed to be.
What do you think of them calling her poverty, comparing her to poverty?
Like, I think it's a little early.
Five minutes in. Legend. What are you doing?
Right. A little early to do that. I think that I think it was Randon, right? Is that the guy's name? Randon?
Yeah, Randall.
He's the one that made that comparison, and it was because he just is looking to target somebody. He saw her going out for an idol. She didn't lie to him, which she could have easily done. She would have been stupid to lie to him because it was obvious what she was doing, but no one seemed to care other than him. She did make an enemy in him early on. Like you said, called her poverty. Luckily for her, they didn't go to tribal. Soda got a bad vibe from Randon, which I think is going to help Venus and help other people, because the women and Soda, anyways, seems to have control of everyone else there in a sense that she's got their ear. And Randon, it's so early that it's going to be one of those situations where as long as it's not me, I don't care who we vote for. It'll probably be Venus and Randon when it comes down to it. And I think that Randon will probably go because he does seem a little slimy.
Yeah, we don't know much about him. They didn't show him too much in the episode. That was probably the only time they really showed the guy.
Yeah, and it was not a fair assessment of who he is as a person or anything like that.
We'll give another episode or two of it there.
And I have a point about Tevin. Admittedly, like I said, I like Tevin. He loves watching Andy Griffith, just like me, and Chapo. So I thought that was an odd little fact that they connected, that they put on, which had a connection with us. You pointed that out. I did not make, I guess, a big enough deal about it to you.
I was someone who loves Andy Griffith and texted at 2 a.m. about it. You know, I couldn't believe when you said you watched the show and you didn't mention it. They show Charlie and these guys walking through the woods, and then they have, and even Probst even mentioned it the other day. They had to get the rights to use the music, and then they used a black and white TV, and
they did
the TV box and whatever, old TV and whatever.
Yes, whatever. I thought about that. Yeah, so it looked like
the whistling and everything. And this guy mentions folks. This guy mentions nothing. I was completely shocked.
Yeah,
I told him
what their favorite episodes are. So if they're in line with mine, but yeah.
I told this guy to text me when he saw it. Nothing in the recap. I couldn't believe it.
I didn't miss it. It was just I was thinking you were talking about something else, perhaps, I guess.
Yes.
All right, so the boat comes to pick up the people for their journey. I don't know what they're calling it this year, but we're going to call it their
journey. Yeah, still a journey.
Okay. And they give us a nice little twist on a card type of game. I like that.
I love the new twist here. It was Maria, our boy Jelinski, who, again, volunteered to go on this, and Tevin. In the past, you know, they've gone through walking through the hills. You know, you get to know each other, and then it says take a path, and then you got the lose the vote. I got tired of that. That was overplayed. I didn't like it to begin with.
Really. All right, so Jelinski had the card which caused him to lose a vote. So the only hope he had of regaining his vote was to trick Maria into thinking that Tevin actually had it. Tevin did not. Maria had to pick Tevin's card to get Tevin and herself 2 votes, an extra vote each. If she picked Jelinski's card, which was whatever, a skull, I believe, then Jelinski was the one that got 2 votes, and Tevin and Maria lost their votes. So he did a good job for about 30 seconds of convincing her that he might have it. And then he folded quicker than Chapo playing Texas Hold'em with his family. No guts at all. It was kind of embarrassing for the guy, which is saying a lot at this point, given the fact that he's already quit the sweat challenge. He lost an ally in Q who wanted to work with him up to that point. And I understand his rationale in not wanting to piss people off, but he did make one bad mistake. And I think the way you have to look at it is that he went back and he told his tribe that he didn't want to risk it because he was worried about making enemies and he wanted to have them as allies moving on.
That's because Maria basically threatened him. Remember, she said, right. Well, whoever's lying, I'm gonna expose you later for being a liar. And then right. As soon as he heard that, well, that's it. I'm out. I have the skull. And right. then when he gets back there, like you're saying, the tribe members are like, what the hell is wrong with you?
Right.
You know,
yeah, like, he was thinking too far down the line.
Yeah.
He didn't want to get them mad. He wasn't thinking about his actual partner, his actual people that he's playing with, and that there's no guarantee that any of those three people, including himself, are going to make it to the merge. He should have just said, hey, she didn't believe me. She picked Tevins, and no one would have found out. He would have been fine. He would have still been able to tell the exact a version of the truth. He could have still told everyone that he didn't have his vote, which is stupid to do anyways, but whatever. And they wouldn't have thought of him as a quitter. He should have went back and just said, hey, she didn't pick mine, so I didn't get the advantage. Those two got an advantage. I don't know what it is because I didn't get it. And here I am. Boom.
Right. Simple.
Yeah. It was stupid. Stupid.
Yeah. No, embarrassing. 0-2 after this, the sweat and then this.
And so the immunity challenge, will jump right into it. It was pretty great. They had a giant lizard. They had a giant snake last year. They always have this giant thing that weighs like 300 to 500 pounds. I really like when they do that. They have those weighted things because it's impossible to drag that around. They don't care how many people you have there. It gets you tired really fast. They always have you carrying it very high up into the air and then dragging it through the sand or the water. It's not easy. You never know what's going to happen. People fall down. The thing falls on top of people. It slips out of their hands. It just makes for really unpredictable TV, and I love when they have that.
Three geckos, which Jeff described, bulging eyes, hands, legs, tail.
Yeah, he went into an odd description of it. It was unnecessary. Out of place, but it was funny to hear.
Yeah, he said 500 pounds each one was to drag it over the obstacle, the fence or whatever you want to call it. It had trouble. One group had trouble getting it over. I wish they would tell you how long it took. And it looked cool once they clipped it. It had this big gecko like hanging off the thing.
The purple team lost. They had picked Jess and Jelinski to do the puzzle. People were yelling things from the sidelines. Probably should have seen that they were doomed, that when Jelinski was a part of it, he just at one some point he was like hanging off to the side, not really doing anything, and it was just Jess doing it.
The team that was at first there, they ran away with it. And then I thought it was funny when he handed the immunity statue.
Yes.
He was kind of handing it to Venus, and Soda like ripped it out of her hand.
Yeah, that got a lot of play on social media.
Yeah, yeah. So that was good. Team that came in second, they had Sega. They came in second, I believe. So they did okay. And those other guys, and then Jelinski's tribe had no shot.
Came down to Jess and Jelinski. I think Jess's real downfall was her inability to form a relationship with Kenzie. And like I said in the beginning, Kenzie is the one who is running things there. Another problem for Jess was that she can't sleep. She's just not able to think at all. She lost her water bottle. She couldn't put sentences together in tribal. Her performance in tribal was bizarre.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, she actually asked Propes to go to somebody else.
Because she couldn't put a sentence together. I couldn't believe it.
You just stop talking at that point. You don't have to go into that detail. Less is more. Like a stupid admission given the fact that she was one of the people that they wanted to vote out and she knew it.
To get on the show, you need to know how to speak. So I don't know how she even got through these rounds of interviews. No. How are you on the show if you can't put a sentence together? And then he asked you a question at Tribal, and he's like, "Why don't you pick somebody else?"
I think that she mentioned not having her ADHD meds, and my understanding and the way that it helps people with ADHD sleep, I think that that is part of her problem and why she can't sleep, because even if you're tired, your mind is still working. And so I think that also contributed not only to sleep deprivation, but not necessarily having her meds contributed to her kind of inability to focus in on the question and answer that question, because you can't hold on to the question, retain it, and then answer it and think about what you're going to answer while still retaining that question. Then you throw sleep deprivation on top of it, you're screwed. I don't know that she's going to be able to pull it together. She does need to get some sleep. Maybe exhaustion sets in at some point and she's able to sleep and she gets into a rhythm. But the way it's looking for Jess, she doesn't have more than a couple of days on the island left.
I thought she was going to bail out there. I thought she was going to quit.
Yeah.
Like after she started, like, you know, tearing up. And I thought for sure she was like, I can't do this. I like how Jeff said he was going to be a little more direct with the survivors during the tribal, tougher questions. And yes. he wouldn't let up about, you know, him quitting. And he kept saying, so you're not going to own it. And then he wouldn't say he did or he didn't. So he was trying to get him to say it, but he wouldn't do it.
It was terrible because Jelinski kept saying, well, I'll get into that. So let's talk about Jelinski. So I don't think that anyone has experienced more on Survivor than he did in such a short period of time. Volunteered for the sweat challenge. He volunteered for the journey. He competed in a reward challenge, competed in an immunity challenge. He tried to complete the puzzle. He lost his vote, and he was unanimously voted out. Like, I don't know what bingo card you have, but that's got to fill up a lot of it.
And I also heard that he lost his water bottle as well.
Yeah.
And he stubbed his toes going up to vote. Complete disaster. Nice guy. The same guy who said he was a legend. Remember at the beginning?
Yes.
That he was a legend. This is Jelinski. I'm an animal.
Yeah, like talking about himself in third person. He said something like, I don't talk about myself in third person, the Probst. And then he kept doing it, not only with Probst there after he said he doesn't do it, but the whole show prior to that. He also said survivors are made, right? Something like survivors are made. And he tried. He really tried everything he could do to turn himself into a survivor. Unfortunately, he failed. And we have to say that in failing to make himself a survivor, he is not a survivor. And that's why he got kicked off first in a unanimous vote.
Yeah. And again, no, he couldn't play a shot in the dark. He had no vote. But the best part was Banu. He kept looking back at Jelinski. He's like, yeah, I can't play with this kid. And then, quiet. And then he was like, they told Probst, it's time to vote.
Yeah, it's time to vote. That was hilarious.
Probst is like blown away.
Because Banu didn't want to answer the question, right? He didn't want to answer whatever the question was. And he said, it's time to vote.
And the funny part is after it's over on his goodbye credit thing, he said he was blindsided. How can you? I mean, come on, guy.
Well, this is the guy who they're actively trying to get him out. The other person, Jess, who they're actively trying to get out, comes to him and says, right, we need to do something. And he's laying there basically sleeping, saying, no, we're good. And then they do like the cutaway and he's like, I know that I'm not in danger. I'm safe. So, but I want her to think that I'm in danger. And I think I'm in danger, like totally not having his finger on the pulse of what was taking place. That was a situation where Q was able to get the person he wanted out. Kenzie did not want him out. Kenzie wanted Jess out, but Q was able to say, no, we have to get him out. And Soda was okay with it. And so the two of them were able to override Kenzie. And it's like a little, was it a triumvirate, a Roman triumvirate, a group of three that are ruling things right now. We'll see how long that lasts, because sometimes it does last a while. So Jelinski goes home, like we said, unanimous vote. I did see that Dalton Ross, if you follow him at all, he was posting things that didn't make it on TV. But what's funny was Jess put her vote into the shot in the dark. So not only is she not able to put sentences together, not remember where her water bottle is, but she actually put her vote into the shot in the dark bucket instead of the urn. When they were going through, they couldn't figure out where her vote was, and then they found it in the shot in the dark bucket.
The first episode, which was 2 hours, I thought it was a good one. Tevin stood out. Manu stood out. Soda obviously stood out. You know, and then we said Jelinski was laughable, but Jess is on the bottom. That girl Liz has no shot. We'll see what happens with that tribe since Q is now the only man on it.
Right, so, which might not be good for him. Yeah. But you never know. There was not a minute of the show episode where I was bored. So I'm glad that we got the other thing was that with Probst being so direct, and he has the opportunity to blow up somebody's game, and I don't think that he should interject himself in such a way that he ruins a game by pointing out that Jelinski was quitting. If no one had mentioned that, if no one had noticed that, it really could have hurt his game. And I don't think that was the case here, obviously, but I don't want him to do something or say something that ruins someone's game potentially. It's a fine line he has to straddle. It won't be easy because it is more interesting when he is direct and when he doesn't let them say, oh, well, I'm not a quitter. And he's like, but you did quit. Like, he needs to be able to do that. But he shouldn't necessarily be the one that brings it up, I think.
Yeah, hope he doesn't embarrass somebody. But yeah, I don't think he should.
Well, embarrass them all you want. Just don't ruin their game. Don't say something to no one else. Don't bring something to their attention that wasn't brought to their attention already, right, that they weren't talking about. That's my only point. All right, so that does it for our first episode of Reality Roundtable. Like I said, it's a little longer because we had 2 hours. Go to the website and check out realityrascals.com. I'm the big guy.
And I'm Mags.
And we're out of here.
Peace.